You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies show. As always, I'm your host for this Locked On Grizzlies podcast. It's a late night. I'm still up. Just recorded this segment with Joe Monax, who's going to be on this show for not one, but two segments tonight, because tonight was an absolute disaster. Absolute disaster. Starting with the Grizzlies losing to the Pistons 101-94, a Pistons team that is not good at basketball, a Pistons team that is coming off the back-to-back, losing a terrible game to the Bucks, who is, as we mentioned all the show yesterday and broke it down, a team that has lost 1-5, coming off a six-game losing streak not too long ago. I mean, just not a good basketball team. And this is a team where you thought largely that you should win this game. It's probably one of the worst. I think it's the worst loss of the season, just because of the way that everything went down. Grizzlies lose to the Pistons, and then we get into the post game presser, and JB doesn't show up. Usually, it takes me when I get to the presser, it's usually like a couple minutes after. When I get there is when JB shows up, because I have to walk from the auxiliary meeting, which is upstairs, down to downstairs. So tonight we waited for like 30 minutes. JB comes in there and just looks absolutely defeated. And as we had speculated, just kind of sitting there all talking to each other, speculated that it was a team meeting. He says something to the effect that some things need to be said, and people need to reevaluate where they're at. Things that need to be said were said, and they won't leave the locker room. So the fourth or fifth team meeting in the last couple weeks, just, big deal, I guess, because nothing's changing for this team. So then we get in the locker room. Obviously, Mike Conley he was hurt tonight during the game. We didn't know what the problem was. He was 0 for 8, 0 points. Very, very bad tonight because he was hurt. We knew he was hurt because he had this like big ice pack on his shoulder, but we didn't know what, obviously it happened during the game. We actually didn't know if it happened during the game at all. We didn't know anything. So we get to the locker room, Mark and Mike both talk. They're the only ones that talk. They're the only ones in the locker room. Everybody else is cleared out, which I think it's not beneficial. I think you let other guys talk. I mean, I get Mark and Mike are going to be the only ones to talk, and they're going to be the ones that are here for this team, and they're going to be the ones that have their voices heard. But other people didn't have their voices heard too. That's where we find out Mike Conley hurt his shoulder in the first quarter. Andre Drummond kind of landed on top of him as he was going up. Andre Drummond was coming down from a rebound, so he kind of landed on top of his shoulder. So that happened. So Mike Conley to make things worse, Mike Conley also has a shoulder injury. So he's said he will basically get treatment and see how it goes tomorrow. So we'll probably have an update on him tomorrow, maybe. We'll definitely have an update before Friday's game. And then Marc Gasol also talks about being more vocal, talks about he needs to get people to understand more. I mean, just a lot of the same stuff you hear over and over. And that's why I don't get it. I just don't get it at this point. I mean, you're a bad basketball team. Talking about how you're going to be more vocal doesn't change anything. It's the plan that, you have to say, there's a certain point where you have to do it on the floor. And unfortunately they haven't been able to get that done. And then, I had heard something about two players getting into it or something, in the forum. I didn't know if it was true. I didn't think it was true. But then I get home and Shams tweets that, believe Caspi and Garrett Temple got into an physical altercation in that team meeting. Very, very heated arguments in the team meeting. Just like I said, just an absolute disaster. And that starts with losing to the Pistons. I think if you win that game, none of this happens. You win that game, even if you struggle and win that game, none of this happens. But the Grizzlies go out and put a 12-point third quarter up. I mean, and the crazy part is in the first quarter, they were playing well. They're playing really, really well. on offense. They were doing some different things I thought that were really working for them. They were running Kyle Anderson in a point guard role more. They're putting Kyle Anderson and Jaren Jackson Jr. in the pick and rolls. They clearly listened to this podcast. We talked about that very, very thing just a couple shows ago, maybe even yesterday. I don't know. They all run together. But they're doing things that worked. I mean, they were getting Jaren Jackson Jr. involved. Jaren was great tonight. I mean, he was like the only person that was scoring points in the third quarter. The third quarter, like I mentioned, they had 12 points. Nine of those came from Jaren Jackson Jr. So, I mean, you know, he's doing great things. And then you come out in the third quarter, you know, the first quarter and the second quarter were fine. The Grizzlies put a 31-point second quarter up. They led by four at halftime, and then you come out and you put the third quarter up, and it was just garbage. I mean, just terrible. Man, so many open three-pointers. Their perimeter defense was awful tonight. You know, and their offense, they just went back to the same stuff. Obviously, Mike Conley wasn't healthy at this point, where he was very, very ineffective, and you roll with Shelvin Mack for 22 minutes. And I get the theory behind it. You roll with Shelvin Mack for 22 minutes because you don't have a point guard and he's your backup point guard. But you don't have to play Shelvin Mack at the point guard. It's okay if you play Kyle Anderson at the point guard, Garrett Temple at the two, Dylan Brooks at the three, and Marc Gasol and Jaren Jackson Jr. together. That's okay. I promise it won't hurt anything to even roll that out. I mean, you have options other than Shelvin Mack. You have options. The fact that they were even in this game late in the fourth quarter still was a testament to Jaren Jackson Jr. And Kyle Anderson, because they were largely keeping them in this game, as well as Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks played very, very good in the fourth quarter as well, getting to the bucket. So some of your young guys that, you know, are basically the future of this franchise also, you know, played very, very well. And then you have Mike Conley with a zero, which is fine because he's hurt, and I understand that. But if he's hurt in the fourth quarter, no reason to even roll him out there. If a hurt Mike Conley is not going to get you what you need, no reason to roll him out there. Leave Mike Conley on the bench and close the game with the five I just listed. Because Mike Conley was shooting it, and he shot it sideways at one point. He was not even shooting it straight. So Mike Conley shouldn't even been on the floor for 28 minutes. Shouldn't even been on the floor on the fourth quarter at all. It just, you know, it was bad coaching coupled with some mistakes coupled with bad play from some people. Just a combination of things. And then, like I said, it blew it over into the locker room. And I'm sure we'll get hear more coming through as we, you know, get into tomorrow. But, you know, the Grizzlies got to do something. Right now, what they're doing right now isn't working. The Grizzlies have to go out and find different pieces. And I know people are just the default response is to fire JB, and I don't know if that's going to help you. I mean, what let's look at this logically. What's firing JB going to do for you? Other than maybe get Jaren a few more minutes and maybe change the offense a little bit more. Is it going to make you marginally better? Yes. Is it going to make you a lot better right away? No. Because whoever the next interim coach is still going to have the same roster. You're still going to have Garrett Temple, role player, playing starters minutes. And I love Garrett, and I've talked about how much I love Garrett on this show, but you're still going to have Garrett Temple playing starters minutes. You're still going to have Shelvin Mack playing 15 minutes a game. You're still going to have Omri Caspi, role player, playing minutes. I mean, these are guys, you have a lot, you have three good players and you have a lot of role players, and that's about it. And that's the problem. And so, you know, you have one person in Kyle Anderson who is that kind of fringe, not really a star, if you will, but more of a B level player. But, you know, they need more off the bench. They need more production besides, Caspi, you know, cause Dylan Brooks and Jamaica Green are basically your only real contributors on a nightly basis for this team, that you can rely on. Beyond that, there isn't much there. So the Grizzlies, they have to go out and do something. They have to go out and make this roster better. Firing JB is not going to make the roster better. And so, yeah, I think the default response is to fire JB, which is just not going to, I mean, I would be surprised if that happens at this point. You look at a team who really was just PR wise, why would they want to go through that? If it's going to make you marginally better, if the roster is still going to be the same, I think they ride it out and see what happens. But I know this is already a long show, just entirely too much to talk about, but we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Joe Melnick. He sticks with me for two segments of this show today, to really kind of the first segment or in the middle segment, we really break down kind of what happened tonight, go through it a little bit more in depth, just as far as the post game stuff. And then, in the last segment, we talk about a couple articles that he has, they're on grizzlybearblues.com right now. Go check them out. But there are a couple articles. Part one is they're both theme is building around Jaren Jackson Jr. And part one is going out and trying to find the complementary role players. The very thing I just talked about, some pieces that will definitely fit, some deals that you definitely can do. And in a lot, and that part two of his article, he kind of look at some stars, if you will, some co-stars that Jaren Jackson Jr. can play with and who the Grizzlies should probably go out and target. So we talk about that in the third segment. So stick with me as we go through the first and second or the second and third segment of this show, and then like I said, we'll come back, we'll wrap it up, and then we'll do it all again on Friday. All right, welcome back to the show. We have had quite a night of action, I guess, from the Grizzlies Pistons game. The Grizzlies lose to the Pistons. I believe it was 101-94. I don't know. Exact score I don't have it in front of me, but there's just so much that happened after tonight's game that I think that's probably the least of the problems. I've got, as always, Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, with me to talk about everything. Just gonna kind of dissect everything that happened tonight, plus talk about Joe's articles that he had over at grizzlybearblues.com, a couple of really good ones before all this happened. But we got to talk about this first. Joe, what's going on, man?
I tell you what, they like to keep things interesting, don't they? I mean, sitting here at midnight on the East Coast for me, but, you know, they had to go ahead and have another team meeting, and apparently Shams reporting an altercation between two random guys who I never would have thought would have gotten into an altercation. But whatever, you know, let's get weird. Let's get weird as we go below 500 in January.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the Grizzlies dropped one game below 500, first time since I guess their first game at 0-1 to the Pacers.
Sure, yep.
And if you haven't already seen this by the time you're listening to this, you probably already heard, but I was there at the game. JB took a very, very long time to get to his press conference, way longer than normal. I put it this way. I like have to basically run from my auxiliary media seating, which is upstairs in the pinnacle level, all the way down to the event level just to make it in time. And I did run the night because I didn't think it was going to happen. And I'm usually there like a couple minutes before, and then JB comes right in. And tonight it was probably a 30-minute wait. And then JB says that he had some team issues, or there was a team conversation stuff that needed to be said. And then as we're hearing now, we're recording this late after the game, that Shams, that there was an altercation between Garrett Temple and Amir Caspi, something I had heard in the bowels of the stadium, but I didn't know who it was and didn't even know if it was true. But I guess the start with the game, a game that the Grizzlies should have won, I think it's almost safe to say it's the worst loss of the year. What do you think?
It definitely is up there. I mean, obviously, Mike Conley gets hurt in the first quarter, has issues with his shoulder, and that impacts his ability to score the basketball. And when Mike Conley can't score the basketball, then who the hell is going to score the basketball? That kind of played itself out. Jaren Jackson was a bright spot in this game. Same thing with Dylan Brooks, which is nice in the grand scheme of things. At least your future is a little bit brighter, maybe. You can look ahead to sunnier days, perhaps, with Jaren and Dylan likely part of a future core. You look at the game, and it's just – it's an example of what's wrong with this team in terms of a lack of talent, in terms of scheme. Something's off with their defensive scheme. I haven't ever remembered, and obviously this has been a problem for the Grizzlies for a while, but it just seemed really pronounced tonight, the amount of open threes, and just not just being open, but wide open. Like, there were times where there was no one within 8 to 10 feet of Piston shooters. You know, a professional basketball player is going to make that shot more often than he's not going to. And it just kind of was a perfect storm. You know, Memphis played relatively well in that first half, especially offensively. And yet they cooled off on that end. The side where they're supposed to hang their hat, supposedly defensively, where J.D. Bickerstaff is supposed to be the brilliant mastermind, that's where it really kind of failed them tonight. And when you're not able to be that defensive stalwart of a team, and you're allowing, you know, Blake Griffin to dominate, and in fairness, Blake Griffin is one of those elite talents in the NBA. But when other players are able to kind of have their way with your defensive schemes and be able to hit threes at the rate that the Pistons were able to do so, between that and Conley not being able to score, it was going to be a tough road to plow for the Grizzlies in terms of winning this game. And it just obviously didn't work out that way. And I think Mike Conley, in his post-game comments, you did a good job covering for us over at GBB, as you always do. And in his post-game comments, he kind of talked about, you know, losing brings these issues out. It magnifies them. And there's certainly some truth in that. If Mike Conley hadn't gotten hurt, or if they had found a way to win this game, you probably are talking with me an hour earlier, because there is no team altercation, and maybe the can gets kicked down the road a ways. But poor defense, lack of scoring from Mike Conley in the second half especially, those things, they'll come back to haunt you.
Yeah, I mean, the Grizzlies, you mentioned that the defense is a big thing. The Grizzlies' perimeter defense has been a problem for as long as you and I can remember. But like you said, it was exceptionally bad tonight. And I think it's been bad all year. I just think that people haven't noticed, or it hasn't been so glaringly obvious, if that makes sense. I was listening to a show early in the year, and they said that there was a lot of open threes. I guess it was a recap of a game. And there's a lot of open threes, just that team just missed it against the Grizzlies. And maybe it's time where you're seeing the Grizzlies are – the people that are just – those shots are just falling now. And the defense really hasn't changed that much. But now these shots are falling for teams. I don't know if I believe that as much as the fact that it really has changed, because at the beginning of the year, they were doing a lot of things really, really well as far as closing out shooters, you know, really defending people, kind of funneling them into the right spots. I mean, they were doing things really well, and that started with Marc Gasol, and he's fallen off quite a bit. Obviously, Mike Conley, 0 points tonight. He got hurt. There was a lot of things that just went wrong with this team. But what's at the core of this team? You see a lot of people say fire JB. I don't know if that's going to fix it. I don't know if that's the problem that ultimately you say, okay, just fire JB and things just get better. I mean, what's the upside there? Of firing JB with the roster they have? What's ultimately the core problem with this team?
The core problem with this team is they're not physically good enough to compete at the highest levels of the National Basketball Association. And that starts with the swing and the miss of the Chandler Parsons contract. That starts with the investment of, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, essentially, in Marc Gasol and Mike Conley. And I do think, in fairness to the Grizzlies, they didn't really have an option. You know, if they had let Mike Conley walk or Marc Gasol walk, that just cripples your franchise in a different way. But you're paying those two guys to be your very best players, on par with the very best of the NBA. And in fairness to them, there's nights where they are those players, but they're just not those guys. They're not Paul George. You know what I mean? They're not Jimmy Butler. They're not LeBron James, obviously, or Kevin Durant or Steph Curry. You know, the list goes on and on. They're not those types of players where they can take over games on a nightly basis. A Russell Westbrook, even, you know, a James Harden, who people love to hate on, but he's a damn good basketball player. And Memphis doesn't have those guys. You know, on a title contender, Mike Conley's probably your second best player. Marc Gasol's probably your third best player, or some mix of those two. But in Memphis, they need to be 1A and 1B. And if there's ever a time where they're not physically capable, then you are really in trouble, because your third option is a 19-year-old who it's not fair to him to expect him to be a consistent scorer at this stage of his career. Or your third option is Garrett Temple, a career journeyman who has struggled to find his way onto an NBA roster for a sustained period of time until the past 4 or 5 years. You know, you're looking at guys that so many of them are playing outside of their ideal roles. And again, it starts with that Parsons deal, which I'm not going to crush the front office for, because I love the signing. I would have done it too, but it just didn't work. And when you make mistakes like that, mistakes have consequences. And I think that they're still feeling the effects of that. Does firing J.B. Bickerstaff and bringing in some new coach, or having Jerry Stackhouse be the interim coach the rest of the year and see what he can do in that role, does that fix this? I don't necessarily think so. I think that there's a lack of talent between trading first round picks and the signing of Parsons and other issues there, that all adds up. And at the end of the day, because of those flawed moves and because of the flawed nature of the roster, they're a 500 basketball team. I think they're going to wake up at some point, and that doesn't mean they're going to go on a 10-game winning streak to cancel all this out. But I don't see them, you know, I saw some people talking about tanking. If Marc Gasol and Mike Conley are healthy, they're not tanking. They're not going to be bad enough to tank, but they're not going to be good enough to make the playoffs. And that was kind of a reality that a lot of people, myself included, talked about being possible. You know, I projected them at 39 wins. You know, you're not making the playoffs at 39 wins, but you're probably at the top of the lottery. You know, you're probably getting the 11th or 12th pick. You send that pick to Boston. And to me, that still would have been a successful season. Tonight is the first night, because I've kind of been the voice of reason, I feel like, in recent weeks on the blog and various spots that I get a chance to talk to people about the Grizzlies, reminding folks of where Memphis was last year. Tonight is the first night where I feel that negativity that a lot of people have been feeling for a while, for the exact reason that you said, Mark. This is a game they should have won. You know, Detroit was on the second night of a back-to-back, yet it was Memphis that looked sluggish and without life in the second half of that game, and that's inexcusable. That never should have happened, but it did, and now the Grizzlies have to deal with the realities that come with that.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a game you 100% should have won. They're a second night of back-to-back. They got crushed last night against Milwaukee. They're 1-5 in the last six. They just got off a six-game losing streak a couple games before that. And they're not good at basketball. Beyond Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin, they're not good at basketball. And so that's what it culminates. And just like Mike Conley said after the game, it culminates into something completely different. If they win this game, or even if they struggle and they still win it, I don't think it boils into what we're doing now. Is now we're talking about guys getting into it after the game, team meetings, all this stuff. So, and to your point, I don't think that firing JB is the answer. I mean, what are you going to do? Fire another coach who can't even finish out his? You can't even let coaches finish out full seasons. I mean, just think about PR wise and logically, the Grizzlies are not going to do that. But make them marginally better. I mean, whoever they put in as interim coach, you still have the same roster you have to deal with. You still have the same limitations that you talked about earlier that you have to deal with. You have role players. Garrett Temple, I love Garrett Temple. I love talking to him. Great guy. But Garrett Temple's a role player. Should be coming off the bench. Shouldn't be a starting two guard. These guys, you're asking guys to do more than what they're capable of doing. And that is inherently the problem with this roster. They have some A-level guys. They got some C-level guys. They got no B-level guys that can come in and one night light it up. Maybe that's okay. One night scored 10 points, but one night really light it up. Those are the type of things they're missing, that secondary level scoring. And this team has problems at the core. Firing JB is not a move that's going to make you better right away. I know this is what people fall back to, but that's not something that's going to make it better just right away. And then we moved again. The Grizzlies had this team meeting after the game, which I think is probably their third or fourth, maybe even fifth team meeting in the last month or the last couple of weeks. I mean, at what point do you have to just say, okay, the meetings aren't working? I mean, at what point do you stop this? I don't understand this seems like a continual thing. Well, where does it get better from here?
I'm not sure it does. I think that you look at somebody like Marc Gasol coming out and saying that he needs to be more of a vocal critic of his teammates. That sounds like it's the opposite of what you're looking for. I think, and you pointed it out, and others did as well on social media, you look at J.D. Bickerstaff in that post-game press conference after that team meeting, he just looked very defeated. And, you know, yes. I can, in my nowhere near the same as a coach, but I'm a coach as well on a much smaller scale at the high school level. I can kind of relate to that feeling and that body language. I've seen that look before. I've seen it in the mirror, to be honest with you, after a really tough loss or a bad practice or a meeting with a parent or whatever it might be. You know, I can kind of see myself in that when I was watching that post-game presser. He looks like he feels powerless, like he doesn't know how to fix it, or he does think he knows how to fix it, but he can't properly execute that vision for whatever reason. He just seems like he's kind of at a loss. And when you reach that point, you know, you kind of have two options. And obviously at the professional ranks, it's a little bit different because you're dealing with guys that make $20+ million. You rely on your leaders and you try to get them to rally the troops, so to speak, and find a way to come back to the shared goal that everybody on that roster should have of team success. Or you start moving on from the place or from the guys that don't buy into what the vision is. If that's Marc Gasol, if that's Omri Caspi, or Garrett Temple, I doubt it's Garrett Temple. But whatever the issues are here, and again, the Gasol part is just kind of speculation. He is the common denominator in a lot of these issues the past several years when they have been issues popping up. But it comes to a point where you have to start thinking about what's best for the psyche of the team, because you watch those guys play. It doesn't look like they're having fun right now. It looks like they're kind of going through the motions. Doesn't seem like they're really enjoying being around each other, being around the game. You know, even at the professional level, basketball is supposed to be fun. You know, sports are supposed to be fun. And you watch teams like the Kings. You know, the Kings are having fun. They're a young team that's running around and they're doing the best they can, and they're competing at a high level most nights. They're a young squad that still makes mistakes, but again, they look like they're having fun playing the game of basketball. Milwaukee Bucks are a great example of that as well right now. You look around the NBA, you see these highlights, you see all this excitement. You don't feel that with the Memphis Grizzlies. It's just not there at the moment. So it's just kind of, for lack of a better word, a grind, it seems, on these guys, and they're not really being able to find themselves in terms of relationships within the team culture they're trying to establish. It all just looks kind of broken at the moment. That doesn't mean that it's permanently broken, but it does seem like, you know, the time for talk is over. You know, team meetings are only going to take you so far. Somebody has to be willing to step up and physically be that person and that guy. And if it's not Mark or Mike, it has to be Jaren. It has to be somebody of that ilk that's going to pull these guys out of the muck and get them back above it and finding what it takes to be a successful team again, because this team was 12-5. They were having success. Now, I think that was a bit of fool's gold, and I always kind of assumed it was. They would cool off at some point, regress back to the mean, but they're also not a team that loses, you know, whatever it is now, 8 of their last 11 or whatever it might be. I don't think they're that bad if they have Mark and Mike in the fold. So at some point, you have to stop having conversations. You need to start putting action to the words that you're saying. And if that doesn't happen, then they're just going to keep going down the spiraling road that they're going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's a thing where, you know, it's just, like you said, team meetings only take you so far. And at this point, I'd say they're probably not working if you've already had 3 or 4 of them in you're to this point now where you have guys getting into it in a locker room. I'm going to get your thoughts on one more question, then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about your articles for Grizzly Bear Blues. But the one thing I haven't seen a lot of, and the one thing that we all noticed, but Mike and Mark were the only people in the locker room talking. It seemed by design, is what I mentioned to Amari Sankofa from The Athletic as I walked out. I said, that seemed odd, but also seemed by design that Mark and Mike basically voiced their opinion for everybody, which I think is odd. I think you have someone like Jaren, you have someone like, you know, other people, especially with someone like Jaren. If you want Jaren to be a franchise star, I think, you know, you got to talk in the good times, you got to talk in the bad times. What's your take on not letting other people talk and Mark and Mike kind of being that voice for everybody, for good, better, or worse?
I don't think it's odd at all. I think it's their team. Like that wasn't really surprising at all to me. It starts with Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, and until they're no longer on this team, it's going to be Mark's team and it's going to be Mike's team. So, you know, when everybody kind of was hypothesizing what was the issue, was it J.B. Bickerstaff getting fired, which most folks kind of knew that wasn't the case, or a lot of people eventually came to the idea of another team meeting that maybe Bickerstaff was actually a part of, you know, it was going to be Mark and Mike. They're the two-headed monster that runs this locker room and runs this team. So I wasn't overly surprised by that. I do think that in this night where you had such disappointing performances in Marc Gasol, especially in the second half, Mike Conley throughout the game, your three bright spots were Jaren Jackson Jr., Dylan Brooks, and Kyle Anderson. And I think it's fair to say that of the entire roster right now, those three guys are probably the ones that are most likely to still be on this team 2 or 3 years from now, whereas, you know, Marcus All can opt out in the summer of 2019, and Conley's contract is up in the next couple of years, and obviously the Parsons deal is over in the next couple of years as well. So whether it's by trade or just simple opting out of a contract, a free agency, you know, guys are going to come and go, but Kyle Anderson's going to be here the next several seasons. Jaren Jackson Jr. is theoretically under team control for almost a decade. Dylan Brooks, you're going to have the opportunity to re-sign and keep in the fold for several years, much like Kyle Anderson. So the three pieces that you have that are young slash versatile slash not quite in their primes, you know, they kind of showed out tonight, but they didn't have a chance, like you mentioned, Mark, to kind of speak their minds because it's not viewed as their team. So it's purely speculation on my part. Is there kind of a power struggle there? Is there something where Mark and Mike are trying to, I know Mark, or it might have been Mike, excuse me, talked about, you know, the team's still relatively new. You know, they've only played about half a season together. They're still trying to integrate pieces. Dylan Brooks trying to get back into the swing of things after his injury. There's a lot of moving parts to this thing. And I think that whenever you have that and you have two guys in Mark and Mike who have a different leadership style than, say, Zach Randolph or Tony Allen did, there's just a lot of transition happening. And you add in the layer of J.B. Bickerstaff struggling in his own right spots. It's kind of a perfect storm of lack of success right now. But it comes back to this being Mark and Mike's team. For better or worse, this is their squad. And until they're no longer with the Memphis Grizzlies, they are the Memphis Grizzlies when it comes to this type of situation.
Joe Molnick, site manager for Grizzly Bear Blues, staying up with me super late, trying to break down the meltdown at the forum that happened tonight. He's going to stay with me through the break. We're going to talk about his articles that he had on Grizzly Bear Blues after the break. And it's about some options the Grizzlies should think about for their future. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the show. Still talking with site manager Joe Molnix of Grizzly Bear Blues, because it has been this was supposed to be one segment, but everything that's happened tonight, we had to extend it to two. We've talked about what happened tonight at the forum. We've kind of taken everybody through the things that have happened, and but now I want to talk about the two articles that you had at grizzlybearblues.com. Believe they came out yesterday in two parts. Part one was what the Grizzlies should do they're both centered around building for the future around Jaren Jackson Jr. But the first one was centered on role players. The second one was centered on more, I guess, of a bigger name, if you will. But the role players, if you haven't read it, go read it now, because it's very interesting and very good. A lot of thought went into it. The role players. Let's talk about that one first. I think that was most interesting to me was the right deal that you had come up with. And I think he fits the most for the Grizzlies short term and long term. What was your, out of those, I think you had three deals there and three different role players. What was your favorite?
I think DeLon Wright of Toronto and the Raptors is my favorite too, probably because it's the most realistic one. Toronto has a wealth of those types of players, those wings that can double as point guards or shooting guards. You know, in the era of positionless basketball, Wright can pretty much do whatever you need him to do on the perimeter. He's a little undersized for the traditional small forward spot, but he can handle, he can shoot, he's versatile in terms of the positions he can defend. He's kind of like Kyle Anderson in that he's young, but not really young. I think he'll be 27 at the start of next season. So he's right in the middle of his prime. You know, you sign him to a four-year contract similar to Kyle's, maybe for $6 million or so instead of the $9 million that Anderson did, and you have him under control for much of his prime. And he's a guy who can, again, alongside Jaren Jackson Jr., and I know our Parker Fleming is going to focus a little bit more on the type of player in terms of skill set that he thinks fits best alongside Jaren moving forward. I was just kind of dealing mostly in trade pieces and general names. I think right with the Raptors, it is a good fit in terms of his ability to create off the dribble, his ability to shoot, the pick and pop and pick and roll stuff that Jaren thrives in. He's a piece that can kind of go along with that and be successful in that in his own right. I also like Trey Lyles of the Denver Nuggets. Again, for a similar reason, I talked with a Nuggets blogger in my research for the article, and he said they would be more interested in a second rounder or two than they would whatever player or players would be coming back in the trade. So you could theoretically, going back to the issues of tonight, this kind of updates the article here, you could trade Omri Caspi and Marshawn Brooks and 2 second-round picks, and I think that gets you Trey Lyles. And that seems kind of cheap to me because this is a guy who, again, 6'10", could shoot a face-up four with an offensive, offensively versatile game. That sounds kind of appealing alongside Jaren Jackson as a five. You know, he kind of projects to be an NBA center moving forward, Jaren does. So I like Trey Lyles, too. He's shown the capacity to be a good NBA player, and he's still relatively young. So Wright and Lyles would be my two favorites. I also wrote about Stanley Johnson. It's pretty possible that Johnson's just not a good basketball player. He didn't play for Detroit in the game against Memphis on Wednesday, but you know, his shooting percentages have always been rough. He's essentially the idea of Tony Allen without actually showing that he's a good defender. He could probably be had for the cheapest cost of all of those guys, at least in theory. But at the same time, he's the youngest of the three. So maybe Detroit's interested in keeping him around for the same reasons that Memphis might be trying to get him. You know, between the Kyle Anderson signing and the attempted Kelly Oubre trade, Memphis has a type. You know, they're looking for guys that are a little bit flawed, that are restricted in terms of their free agency and the moves that can be made, and that can kind of grow and develop alongside Jaren over these next few years. They may not be 19 like Jaren is, but early to mid-20s, games still kind of growing. That's the type that Memphis is trying to find, at least that I've kind of seen. So that's what inspired that first part of the article.
And this goes back into what we were talking in the previous segment, is that the Grizzlies just don't have the capability off the bench to really compete in that second unit on a nightly basis. It's something like, you know, not necessarily one of these deals, although I like the Trey Lyles deal as well that you threw out there, but something like this has to happen for the Grizzlies if they want to get better. The problem is the Grizzlies have never been able to really go out and get some youngish player on a trade deal that is cheap. They've never shown they can really do that, A. And B is you don't have, like you mentioned, you don't have a whole lot of assets to give. And those are the two, I guess, problems that you start with. But if the Grizzlies want to be better, if they want to try to get rid of that pick into Boston this year, which they should, they need to go out and for the short term and the long term, they have to figure out some kind of deal that gets them a player, a youngish player that they can keep a hold of and start to build around Jaren Jackson Jr. Is there a guy out there that you came across that you didn't mention that didn't make the article that you liked but maybe couldn't figure it out or just didn't include?
You know, there's a couple of guys that are kind of floaters. You know, Kelly Oubre Jr. probably not via trade, but in that restricted free agency period, he's still a possibility for them to try to attract. Phoenix would probably be able to outbid them for whatever Kelly Oubre is going to get in terms of money. But that would be a guy to kind of keep an eye on. Anybody that is of that ilk, you know, that early to mid-20s, cheap, relatively cheap, and flawed. I think that's what makes them cheap. You know what I mean? I mean, the player that we'll probably talk more about here in a moment that might be the peak of this is Malcolm Brogdon of the Milwaukee Bucks, who is having a phenomenal season, an extremely talented player. He fits their system really well. He's executing at a high level. But what makes him unique and what his flaw is he's 26 years old. He's going to be 27. You know, he's kind of like DeLon Wright. What's he going to be for you in terms of his ceiling moving forward? Right now, he's a darn good basketball player, but he's 3 years younger than, or 3 years older, excuse me, than Kelly Oubre. So the flaw is what makes somebody affordable. You know, Malcolm Brogdon at $16 or $17 million a year, you look at the numbers, that's a hell of a bargain. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon is a darn good basketball player, and that's part of why it would cost so much to get him. But that's what you're looking for. You know, Kristaps Porzingis isn't coming to Memphis. You know, D'Angelo Russell maybe is the peak of that ceiling where maybe you can see an opportunity if they are able to buy out Chandler Parsons and free up money in other spots. Maybe they can find a way to swing a deal where they can bring him in. But that seems like the peak of that, you know. So if it's not going to be D'Angelo Russell or somebody like that, you're looking for guys who have flaws who can potentially develop alongside Jaren, because that's where the future's heading. You know, the future's not in Marc Gasol and Mike Conley. It's just not. The future is in the 19-year-old kid who, you know, 2 or 3 years from now at 21 or 22 years old is going to potentially be dominating this league. He has the potential to do it now. You know, he just can't do it consistently just yet because he's, again, 19 years old. So those are the kind of pieces that you're looking for. You know, even in the case of a Malcolm Brogdon, who obviously is better than the three names I mentioned before, they're still flawed. You know, there's flaws there that make them obtainable. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been available in the first place.
Yeah, like you mentioned that Malcolm Brogdon, obviously that is the second part. Part two of your article, which is basically trying to find a co-star for right. Jaren Jackson Jr. And it is slammed because of the fact of the assets they don't really have to give. We're going to keep it short. We're going to end there. Joe, I appreciate you joining me as always, staying up late tonight. We had so much going on. We had to record tonight so we can go and get it out for everybody because it was just too much happening. But I appreciate you staying up.
Of course, not a problem. We'll talk more next week, and maybe we can talk about how we were both surprised that Andrew Wiggins was so interestingly focused on by Grizzlies fans and folks who came to the blog. That was fascinating to me, the piece de resistance of that article that I thought everybody would crush. Andrew Wiggins, people apparently don't hate that idea. Maybe they don't watch the Timberwolves. But
I'm secretly, I guess it won't be a secret anymore, but I was – a closet Andrew Wiggins. I love Andrew. You have some of those players that you're like irrationally in love with, and right. Andrew Wiggins is one of those players for me. Don't ask why. I couldn't tell you why. I love the idea of Andrew Wiggins, and so does everybody else. And so we'll talk about that more next week because I think it's an interesting concept, but I think it deserves more than just the few minutes that we can give it to. But we'll talk more next week. Next week we're changing the. We decided to change the segment day next week. So we're going to start doing Joe's segment on Wednesday every week because they have so many Wednesday games this month of January. We're going to move it so that we don't have to stay up super late every night to record it. So next week, Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, will be coming on the Wednesday show in the last segment of the Wednesday show. Again, Joe, thanks for joining me, man.
Of course. I enjoy these late night sessions. Have a good one, Mark.
Thanks again to Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, for joining me. I know it's very late for him. It's late for me. But if you missed it, also, we're moving Joe's segment to Wednesday's show instead of Thursday's show. Grizzlies have just a lot of Wednesday games this year and trying to make it easier on both of us. And they have no Tuesday games. So we're going to have Joe's segment every Wednesday in the third segment of that show. So make sure you stay tuned next week. We'll talk more about Andrew Wiggins and the possibility of that, what that might look like. So stay tuned for that. Again, follow me on Twitter at King_producer. Follow the show at Locked On Grizz. Make sure you download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from, iTunes, Stitcher, or online at LockedOnGrizzlies.com.